Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Deborah and Connie Sue, and we're waiting for our sister Heather to join us. And you are listening to Three Women, Three Ways. And Three Women, Three Ways is proudly presented by Three Divas. And that's the Three Divas are Connie Sue, Heather, and myself, Deborah Adams. I would like to turn it over to you, Pinkley. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, that sounds like I'm two people, Connie Sue and Pinkley, and it's really only one. Not to confuse our listeners or myself or you or anyone else. For that
good
matter. So good morning, and yes, this is Connie Sue, but also known as Pinkley. I am a blooming survivor of domestic violence, going on about, 15 years of surviving and working in the field of domestic violence and sexual assault in a local nonprofit program. Received my bachelor's degree in social justice, and I think that was in 04 or 05 or 07. Geez, I really can't remember. Good thing we're talking about New Year's resolutions. We're going into New Year.
That's right.
How the time flies. So I'm really excited this morning about talking about New Year's resolutions. But before we jump into that, Deb, why don't you introduce yourself? We always love to hear your tagline.
Okay. Well, for those of you who are joining us for the first time today, and welcome if you are, I'm Deborah Adams. I live in Southwest Washington State, and actually live in Vancouver. And Vancouver, Washington is the original Vancouver. When I say that, I don't know if you've noticed it, Pinkley, but people always go, oh, B.C. for British
right.
Columbia.
Yeah.
No, W.A. for Washington. So there's always something fun going on with me, you can be sure. But yes, my tagline is, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. And the it I'm talking about is domestic violence. Survivor of 17 years, have four grown children that have blessed me with eight grandchildren. And then I returned to college as an adult and have a bachelor's and master's degree. And I worked it. So for the past 20 years, I've been working as same as Connie Sue with the nonprofit community-based program. And I see Heather's joined us. Hi, Heather. Oh, she's not answering. Anyway, so we would like to invite you to join our conversation today if the topic interests you. And our call-in number is 646-378-0430. And we appreciate it if you want to call in and join us. It's fun to hear what you have to say as well. And Pinkley, why don't you introduce our topic?
Well, as I said, New Year's resolutions. And I was just sitting here thinking, Heather, are you there yet with joining us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, awesome. Now we can hear you.
You know what my resolution is? A new alarm clock.
Oh, okay. Well, that's certainly an achievable New Year's resolution.
Yeah, Heather, and you can open up the chat room if you want. I think you were trying to get in there. I backed off.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
you
and
want
Heather,
to introduce yourself this morning, Heather.
Well, I am Heather Stark, and I am here late, unfortunately. My alarm clock didn't go off this morning, and I was up late doing some stuff, and so I'm late, so hence my New Year's resolution. I am a student and working on my PhD in organizational psychology, working on my dissertation, and I became interested in violence against women about 10, 12 years ago when it became something quite personal to me. And so what I, the direction that I have taken is the academic one, and I want to do some research. My dissertation is going to be on the whether there's a relationship between experiencing domestic violence in your life and later on having experiencing work satisfaction. So that's who I am, and I am really, really excited about our topic this morning. So that's me, and I'm jumping in late here, and I already said my first resolution.
Awesome. Well, that is one that we know that you can achieve, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That'll be right?
That already sounds like a successful resolution. It's a new alarm clock. So I know that we've talked a little bit, Heather, before you, Deb and I got on the air. And so we're going to talk a little bit about statistics and history. And but I just want to take a moment here this morning to reflect on achievements before I try to jump off and set goals for new achievements. I just glanced at the calendar today and realized what day it was. And I think as survivors of not just a day, but as survivors, I think that we went into a situation where we thought something was going to happen, that we would be married and successful in our relationship and all those good things. But what I've come to the conclusion is, for myself personally, is that it's always about reinventing myself and my surroundings and my experiences in a positive way, because an event, a pretty tragic event, happened. It's traumatizing. And I point that out because I realize that today, which I hadn't thought about for a long time, was the birthday, the 29th of my former husband, who has since passed away. So I know that people have poignant moments in their lives for reflection. So I just, as a survivor, I think that it's more difficult. It's as a survivor of any kind of trauma, an event that's taken place in your life. And on that note, we want to talk about the positive things that can happen, and not a resolution is not something to set ourselves up for failure. And it can be something very simple. And I've often take resolutions to heart, and I don't know if Deb knows this, that usually on New Year's Eve, what I do throughout the year is I have what's called a year box, and things that have been very special or events that I've gone to, I put things in this year box, and on New Year's Eve, I go through this box and do a lot of reflection and meditation and gratitude for the year. And so I was just having a very poignant moment this morning as I called in to talk to our listeners, that life does go on and that we are survivors. And I just thank you for my sisters and for our listeners who can maybe have some similar experiences around that. It doesn't always have to be about I'm going to do all of these things. One thing can be a resolution, and it can be successful, and not hoping to set people up for failure. So what do you two think about that?
Well, I like that idea, Pinkley. I especially like the idea of you're putting the things in the box and revisiting them. I think sometimes as we struggle, we convince ourselves that we can't go there. We can't go there.
Right.
And, in fact, I think that sometimes we do need to go there. Not all the time. That's
right.
Kind of destructive. But sometimes we need to revisit that. And sometimes we need to go back and reflect on what we've been through and how far we've come, and mourn what we went through. I think mourning is the word for it. What about you, Deborah?
You know, I like the aspect of reflecting back a little bit as well. I find myself getting so caught up in the daily, you know, tasks and routine and thinking this is just another crazy day I'm going through, that often you forget some of the highlights. They get buried by the lowlights, maybe.
Yeah.
And so for me to reflect backward and say, hey, I really did accomplish something this last year. And, you know, maybe it wasn't even accomplishing my New Year's resolution, so to speak, but it was something that was important to me, and I did complete it, and it feels good to have completed it. Or if even just the fact of what we talk about a lot of times, just surviving, you know, getting through that time and still being here, walking and talking. And so I really enjoy the history aspect of all of our topics. So I did just a real quick little glance. And, of course, I went to the fabulous resource of Wikipedia. You know, nothing is guaranteed.
If it's on Wikipedia, it's got to be right.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. But it's interesting what it does say is the Romans dedicated New Year's Day to Janus, the god of gates, doors, and beginnings, for whom the first month of the year, January, is also named. And we are talking about they call it the Gregorian calendar. And not everybody in the world uses the Gregorian calendar. But what this little article says is that really the roots of New Year's is a pagan tradition. And it's occurred in 153 BC.
Wow.
As they first started talking about it. And after the 7th century, pagans of Flanders and the Netherlands, they exchanged gifts. But then a saint spoke out and said that was not the way to celebrate the new year, so they stopped sharing gifts. And New Year's days occur in all ethnicities, nationalities, and cultures. Of course, we've heard of the Chinese New Year, the Vietnam New Year. There's a Sinhalese New Year, Tommy, Malayalam, Telugu, Thai, Hindu. There's every Islamic New Year, Israel, Japanese New Year, Korean, Ethiopian. So everybody celebrates. This is as close as we come to having one global holiday or one day of observance that is kind of global, which is rather fascinating in our very diverse, world that we live in. And sometimes people will celebrate the New Year with fireworks, usually the midnight, the day before, the December 31st. And actually, talking about birthdays, Pinkley, the 31st is my father's birthday, and he's passed as well. And we always, as a family, used to have a holiday open house on the 31st. So this is kind of a special holiday in a lot of ways to me that we continue to celebrate it. It doesn't really say where the idea of resolutions came from, which I find interesting. And unless it's just from the name of it, which is, Janus, the god of gates, doors, and beginnings. So maybe that's where the thought of, maybe, as Connie said, reflect back and then move forward. What do you think about that?
I think that's probably a really good way to look at this holiday. I think in the past, I've always experienced people who have talked about, oh, forward, let's go forward, let's go forward, don't think about the past. And I think that past is important. It lays the base for what we're going to do in the future. And I think that as much time should be spent on thinking about what we've done, where we've come from, what we wanted to do better, what we did that was outstanding. I think that's important to remember. And I think we need that whole base before we start saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do in this coming year.
And I think it's a celebration of accomplishments. It's like what Deb was saying, you get so busy in the day-to-day minutia of, you just are moving forward, and I have to honestly say I haven't been very good this well. And there, I'm being self-critical about doing my year box, but just knowing that that's there, if I choose to reflect, which oftentimes is very healing and therapeutic. It's and it's also a way to honor other people in my life that I've spent time with. Just like going to a movie or going to a play, you know, just saving that little ticket stub and going, oh, wow, yeah, that's right, we did that, that was fun. Or, you know, going to a child's play and saving a program. It brings up, it's a way to provoke really creative and meaningful memories. And New Year's resolutions doesn't, for me, they don't always have to be about a finite, tangible thing. Like the number one resolution is, of course, to lose weight. Well, I think that we talk about that all the time. That's our goal all the time. But if you can say to yourself, I've accomplished these things, I've spent time with these people that I cherish and love in my life, and you know what? I'm going to do that again. I'm going to go to a movie, or I'm going to go visit someone, or I'm going to go have a cup of coffee with someone. Or if you write poetry or writing, it's just a special containment that you can, if you choose to visit and reflect. So I think looking back over the last year can be a lot of different things, celebration, grieving, you know, just in memory of the things that you maybe have forgotten that you have done. So I look forward to New Year's Eve as a way to enfold or embody a lot of those different aspects.
Well, I was thinking, too, that when I was younger, my New Year's resolution seemed to be more concrete, things that had a visible or quantifiable outcome. As I progress through life, I think my attitude towards my resolutions is changing. And now I'm thinking, thinking as Connie Sue keeps saying, reflective, more reflective, and definitely more positive as far as my human growth. Do either of you have a thought on that?
Yes, I think that sometimes we are so concrete in what we want. We want to lose 20 pounds. We want to stop this habit. We want to do this. We want to do that. And it's very concrete. And when you stop and look at it, it's all kind of shallow, except for getting physically fit, although even some of that is kind of shallow. And I think that as you age, I agree with you, Deborah, we tend to look at more, shall we say, I don't know, global is the word. We tend to look at our resolutions and what we want to accomplish on a different level, at a different plane. Am I saying that correctly? Can you guys understand what I'm saying there?
Definitely I can, because it's exactly how I feel. I mean, yeah, to put a number, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. That's, you know, it's kind of like, what is driving that? What's the motivation behind that? And then what happens if I don't meet that? And so if I change the parameters and the feeling around my resolutions to be more internal, such as learning something new, that seems to be, or getting more education or trying something new, that seems to be high on the list of our most popular New Year's resolutions. And there's ways to do that. You can say, I want to learn Spanish in 10 days, or you can say, I'm interested in the Spanish culture and the language, and there's different ways you can go about it that don't have to be quite so concrete.
Yeah, well, I think so too.
It's interesting, and I'm looking at a resource. It's called Statistic Brain. It's a statistic verification from the University of Scranton, Journal of Clinical Psychology. This was published mid-December of this year, and it says the top 10 New Year's resolutions for 2012 number one, lose weight. Two, getting organized. Three, spend less, save more, enjoy life to the fullest, staying fit and healthy, learning something exciting, quit smoking, help others in their dreams, fall in love, and spend more time with family. And as we know, a lot of our resolutions fall to the wayside probably about the first couple, 3 to 4 weeks of January. And they're not, they're things, they're like losing weight or getting organized. That's like an ongoing thing that we probably struggle with every day, or we probably wouldn't have it on our resolution list.
Mm-hmm.
It's about,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
maybe it's our grand hope that, okay, this year it's going to work.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
3 weeks I'm going to be organized. Right.
Right. So they're patterns of how you live that you're asking yourself to change. So I would encourage and challenge ourselves and our listeners to look at New Year's resolutions as something that you're moving through, accepting and honoring and celebrating and grieving if that's something you need to do. And they're probably all of that into one event. And I don't even know if you can do it in one event, but not to look at it as just, okay, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. Because for me, I can say that's a total setup for failure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to set myself up to fail. I want to make that as a goal, but I don't know if I necessarily want to make that as a resolution. So,
well, I think, Pinkley, I think one of the ways that helps with those kinds of things is, you know, lose 20 pounds. Okay, that's great, but how are you going to do that?
Right.
Maybe our New Year's resolutions need to be a little bit more specific, like eat less fried food. Or instead of just saying, I want to do something new, I want to learn something new, I want to learn to speak Chinese. Or I want to return to school at this institution. Or I want to return to school for this field. Something that we can actually move from. So instead of having just this overriding thing that can be interpreted in any way or not interpreted at all, i.e. lose weight, get something more specific that you can actually do.
So I just had a big aha moment. What we're talking about here are maybe two different things, resolutions versus setting goals.
Okay, so how do you
see the difference? Having a resolution imply that we have set a goal. And maybe because we all know that if you are working on a goal, you do have to have concrete steps and measurable results, or else we lose interest and we don't complete the task. But is resolutions the same thing? What do you think about that?
Well, I certainly think that is one way to look at it, the resolution versus goals. I think that they can be also one of the same. I'd like to read this. This is very interesting. I did a little research this morning, and I think this kind of does a touch tone about what I'm trying to talk about this morning. It says, this is by Lisa Firestone. She's a psychology expert on relationships, and she's got a blog. She writes for the HuffPost Signature. Achievable is the optimum word here, the optimal for a longer, happier life. She goes on to say resolutions are notorious for falling by the wayside a few months or even days into the year, and that only 8% of people who make New Year's resolutions are successful in achieving them. So that's what I'm saying. You're setting yourself up almost for failure immediately. So rather, our resolutions tend to focus on fixing our flaws or correcting our failures. This negative viewpoint comes from our critical inner voice we all possess that either alters us what we need to fix while reminding us that we won't succeed. So she goes on to talk about 5 things. Be more mindful. Mindfulness meditation is an amazing method of learning to live in the moment. And learning to live in the moment and appreciate what you're accomplishing. Exercise for a healthy mind. Not necessarily I'm going to lose that 20 pounds, but mental activities for well-being. She talks about sleep, getting the right amount of sleep,
mm-hmm.
and differentiate from your past. The end of the year tends to be a time for reflection. And again, that's what we were talking about, doing the reflective look at your past. And challenge your inner critic. To make any of our resolutions a success means challenging our own critical inner voice that says to us, you will fail.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, like, here's an example of what my aha moment was. So say this is your New Year's resolution. I'm going to rediscover my public library. And then my New Year's resolution is I'm going to read more books.
Ah, uh-huh.
So what is, for me...
Well, maybe what we're saying here is that the resolution is the goal, but that's not enough, that we need to have that concrete plan
mm-hmm.
in order to accomplish the goal. Otherwise, we're likely to just let that goal go.
Right, and to have realistic time expectations. If we give a New Year's resolution, like we've mentioned, 3 to 4 weeks to be accomplished, well, is that realistic?
Yeah.
Who's going to lose 3 pounds in 3 to 4 weeks?
Yeah, we can all agree that that's not realistic.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What are you saying? Wait a minute. I want to pop in here and give our phone number. We'd love to hear your thoughts about resolutions for the new year. Our phone number is 646-378-0430. We also have our chat line open, so please contact us and let us know your thoughts about resolutions and New Year's resolutions.
This is Deborah, and I've been reading an author whose name is Sark, and that's an acronym for Susan Ann something Kennedy. And she handwrites her book. She's very very creative and very interesting person in general. But one of her most recent books, she talks about making micro movements.
Ooh.
And micro movements are like, so reading more books is the macro, right?
Right.
That's the macro movement. So now let's think about some smaller steps to get us there. One is make a list of authors you want to read, or make a list of titles of books you want to read. The next one is acquire the book. And it could be even smaller than that. It could be decide to write the list. A title you want to read.
Yeah, I think that distinction is an important one. Sometimes
it's how small you go, the smaller the movement, the easier it is to attain, I think, is kind of the process that she's talking about. And then pretty soon the series of micro movements will attain the macro goal. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I like that idea because then you have success right away. I mean, how many times have we made that resolution, again, using the, I'm going to lose 400 pounds this year. And the January comes, you haven't lost an ounce. As a matter of fact, you've gained, half a pound. And you just feel so defeated. You feel so, such a loser. You feel like such a loser. You can't even keep my own goals that other people can keep, blah, blah, blah. With those micro goals, okay, maybe I'm going to step on the scale. Maybe I'm going to find out what my real weight is.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to go to the grocery store and not buy a bag of candy.
Right.
Those micro goals are attainable, and you can do that and feel a success, feel a little bit of success when you do those micro things rather than the big, huge, overall goal.
Right.
I like that idea.
Yeah. So that's Sark. Let me see if I can find out what her real name is and get her website for you, because she's just phenomenal. But, yeah, I like the whole idea of smaller goals, smaller steps, and all together they
they make the whole,
and that really appeals to me.
Well, earlier, Deborah, you were talking about, you know, when you were younger, you would make these huge overarching goals or resolutions. Do you think that as we get older, we tend to go more toward these small attainable steps than the huge overall picture? I mean, that we do tend to look more realistically at breaking down what we want to do into steps?
I think for me, and I think I learned that the hard way by, you know, by trial and error and realizing
Isn't that how we learn everything?
Yeah, because that big, insurmountable goal was never really very achievable, so I kind of learned the hard way. And I find that's true for me in all of life and in every aspect of my life. I have to learn it the hard way.
I think you have a lot of company. We have a lot of company in that regard.
Okay, I found her website, SARC. It's planetsarc.com. So PlanetSarc.com. And she has a really fun website. You can sign up for a letter. She has an 800 number. You can call it daily. She calls it her inspiration phone line. The number for that is 415-546-3742. And you actually hear her, it's Sark herself, and she kind of has a quote or some little spark of wisdom that she's garnered through her life. So, and on her website, you will see her hand-drawn images in color, just like she does in her books. There's even a video. You can sign up for a newsletter. She's got a bazillion resources. So
that sounds like a great resource, Deb.
Yeah, it's a fun. Okay, here's what her name is. Sark. Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy.
Wow.
That's her full name.
I love the rainbow in there.
Yeah.
Shades of my hippie past.
Oh. So no wonder she uses the acronym, huh? And no wonder I'm attracted to her, because I love acronyms. I love that challenge of the acronym.
Okay. Again, I want to give out our phone number, because we'd love to hear from you and how you're handling New Year's resolutions. Do you do New Year's resolutions? Join us. Phone number is 646-378-0430, or you can join us on our chat line. I was usually just gave up on New Year's resolutions about 5-6 years ago. I just thought this is just shooting myself in the foot, and I'm just not going to do it anymore. But actually, our conversation is making me feel a little bit more encouraged about doing some of those micro steps.
Awesome.
That I can handle.
Yeah. Not so overwhelming. Connie, are you with us? Are you ruminating in the background there?
I am. I'm thinking of I am being hard on myself right now. My critical voice is telling me you have not done a very good job keeping your yearbox up. So this negative.
Yeah, but it's not New Year's Eve yet. You've got time.
Well,
there you go.
I'm correcting my failure right now. This negative viewpoint comes from that critical inner voice that we all possess that alters us from what we need to fix while reminding us that we won't succeed. So,
and why is that critical voice so loud? And why does it override any other voice that we have going on in our heads?
Yeah, why is that? I mean, can we blame our parents for that? I mean, we blame
I'm
them,
gonna
blame them
the,
for almost everything else. Can we blame them for that one?
I'm going to blame the abuser.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah.
And
that's true, actually. That really is true, that critical nature of abuse is something that is very, very hard to shake, even if you had a lot of self-confidence before. And it's
a lot of us did have self-confidence before. I did.
Yeah.
Well,
but,
certainly. It's like what we said in the beginning. It's here I am, 51 years old. I'll be 52 in July. And part of my reflection, it's not that I dwell in the past. I think that there's a difference. What I'm trying to do is honor my past. I have a different path that I thought I was going to be on. I never signed up to be a domestic violence advocate. That was never one of my little check boxes when I did my career choices in high school. It was a result of my experience. So at the same time, I want to honor my experiences, but it is part of that self-reflection and to honor what you've been through and to celebrate your survivorship. And that's hard, I think.
You know, a couple things that I learned as a result of being in that 17-year abusive relationship is that it's okay to change our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to ask for help. Those are the two main things. And then how do I apply that? I mean, the reason I say that it's okay to change my mind is because my social and cultural upbringing said you don't get divorced. Well, you know, the abuse is what broke the contract, so it's okay that I decided to get divorced. And if other people don't understand that, then they'll have to figure it out on their own. And that asking for help was really key in the fact that even if people weren't able to give me the help, but to allow myself to be humble to ask for help was a huge learning for me. It's almost like I remember as a child, you know, like when you get in an argument with your siblings or somebody, your best friend, and you don't want to say you're sorry. You know, you say mean things to each other and you don't want to say you're sorry. I remember how difficult it was for me to say I was sorry to my friends. And so that's a lesson that I carried with me. Being able to say I'm sorry doesn't mean right or wrong or you're better or I'm worse. It means that you accept responsibility. And I think that's got a lot to do with New Year's resolutions, too. You know, the better you know yourself, the easier it will be to figure out what we're calling our micro-movements, Heather, to achieve our bigger max goals.
Well, I think those are good points, Deborah. I really do. One of the things that I have a hard time with is just getting past panic. I tend to panic initially when I'm thinking of something new and thinking of all the things about why I can't do that, why it's not going to work. And I have to work. I always say I have to beat myself past that. In order to really get to, okay, I can do this.
Okay, I get that.
And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why I've avoided doing resolutions in the last few years. I don't want to go through the beat myself up phase.
And I can share another resource with you that helped me with those types of things, Heather, and it was another book written by Dr. Susan Jeffers, and it was called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And she's since written a follow-up book to that, but the first one was so powerful to me because I stayed in that relationship because of a lot of fears I had. Fear,
sure.
I would disappoint my family, fear I would disappoint my children, fear I would disappoint myself, you know, all those things.
Well, fear of pain.
The fear of pain, the mm-hmm. fear of what is unknown.
The
fear of loss,
yeah.
Right?
Loss.
And grief of the relationship and what you imagined you would have. So Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway is a very powerful book for me, and I highly recommend it to anybody who's in that state where you're feeling the anxiety or anxiousness or whatever, however it is you describe it. But it really helped me. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. So that's a little self-talk I do to myself all the time.
I like that one.
Yeah,
I like that one. In this time of beginnings, because it really is a beginning, what can you guys share with us what some of these little mini steps are that you're thinking of, or have you thought of any?
I have. Connie
what?
Sue, have you?
Well, you sort of.
Okay, well, here's mine, and it's simple, and it's the only one I'm going to make this year.
Okay.
The macro is to reread this book called Simple Abundance, A Day Book of Comfort and Joy, written by Sarah Bond Brainock. And this is a book that has an essay a day, and at the end of the month she has some joyful simplicities you can do. And it's I already have the book. I've already read it, I think, twice, but it's been a long time. So I'm going to, that's my resolution, to read the book, and my micro movements will be to read the essay each day. And another micro movement might be to once a week do one of the activities that she suggests. And she also recommends what she calls daily pages. She's got a whole lot of recommendations in this 365 essay book that's what I'm going to do.
Wow.
That's macro and micro.
That's, I love that, though. I love that. It's not about this is what I have to do to be a better person. It's like this is what I want to do to enhance my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I really appreciate about that, Deb, is that it's not around other people's expectations of you.
Yeah.
And I think that oftentimes we set goals or resolutions based on other people's ideas or expectations of what they think that we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than focusing on the internal mechanisms of our own life and being authentic and being true to yourself. And I think that that's one of the highlights of my process year by year, is continuing to be more authentic and more accepting of myself. It's been a real challenge to be who I want to be. Even the nickname that I've somehow, I know why it occurred, the pinkly part, but to stay true to myself in any part of your life, to stay authentic and true and feel grounded and secure and committed to that. So I think that that would be part of my continued resolution, is to just continue to be grounded and authentic in who I have become. It's not the person I thought I was going to be, but this is what it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this is how
I like that too for you. I mean, being authentic is kind of hard work.
Well, there's so much different kind of authenticity, you know. I mean, I find that, you know, with my family, it's one, I'm one person, and with my coworkers, I'm another person, and they're both authentic.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and so, yeah, I agree with that we often have what we call different roles and different personas. But for me, meaning authentic would be to integrate all those so that I don't have to have different hats or different personas, that it can all be one. And I'm telling you, your friends and family don't really like it when you do that.
And they sure don't, do they?
Don't like it when you do that, because then I don't know, they feel threatened. I don't know if they feel scared or nervous that you're changing, and does that mean change for them, which it probably does.
Well, none of us like change. I mean, we say we do, but we really don't. We like comfort, and the known, the way things always are, is more comfortable than anything new until you get used to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't challenge that. I like change. But I do still get into a place of comfort, even, you know, though I kind of think I do embrace change. But I still get in my patterns and my comfort zone, and sometimes I feel stuck there. And that's when I realized that it's going to take some kind of change to help me move through that feeling of stuckness.
Well, I'm facing a lot of changes in the next month or so, and so I have, you know, having just realized that, I have felt a sense of being overwhelmed by this. And I got to say, ladies, that you've helped me here. You've helped me with the idea of not just resolutions, but on how to manage that change, that upheaval. I can do it in small steps. I can do it in those micro movements. So thank you.
Hey. You know, I love to share and I love to talk. Everybody will attest to that, anybody who knows me. I always say, if I know it, you can know it.
I always say I can handle anything as long as nobody tapes my mouth shut.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, we don't want to silence our voice, that's for sure.
No.
So, let's talk about some of the resolutions that are kind of on the top of everybody's list, if you want to, for a minute. I looked up a couple of different lists, and they were in different order, but they pretty much had the same thing. Everybody thinks in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting, right? I had a source from USA.gov, and then it was kind of in a blog in LiveScience.com. But people, volunteer was really high on both of those lists. It was in the top 12. Volunteering. What do you think about that?
Well,
why is volunteering on our list of resolutions?
I love that. I mean, that encourages me that so many people have that on their list.
Yeah.
Because
why do you think it is on the list?
Say that again?
I mean, I'm kind of wondering why so many people have that on their list.
Well, exactly. And I'm thinking, does that mean that we as a culture are beginning to realize more and more that we all kind of have each other's backs and that we all need to pitch in? Is this something we think we should do?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Well, maybe it's a hopeful move towards altruism, that people are becoming more in tune with it's not just about me, but about helping other people.
Mm. So altruism, you mean a sense of heart for themselves, that it makes them feel better about themselves?
Yeah,
but
in a way that is not materialistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that we're a pretty materialistic society. And
I mean, I definitely know that I started volunteering and it led to the last 20 years of my life working for the nonprofit community-based agency.
Right.
What about you? Have you volunteered anywhere and it kind of changed your life?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't necessarily want to talk about it, but yeah, I volunteered at a time when I was just recovering from something bad, and it did. It really did change my life. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. So maybe that's the motive behind people. Maybe people are looking for change, but they aren't necessarily looking for. Maybe they're looking for deeper change.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think volunteering in the long run ends up helping yourself. It makes it you're doing something for the good of others, but it's really about offering your services, so you end up feeling better about yourself. It feels better to give than to receive, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that you learn about yourself when you're volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know for me, like Deb, I mean, it opened up it opened up a career for me, which I didn't realize at the time. I was just doing it because I had, for some reason, turned into some kind of didn't know what it was, an activist, is what, you know, you
would
label,
rouser.
You would label it
one.
Now. But, you know, I wanted to learn more about what this stuff was and had a very grandiose idea of, you know, that this should never happen to anybody else. But as we know, it does. So, but it has, you know, it changed my life, basically.
Yeah. I think we're volunteering for two reasons. One was to prevent what everybody was predicting for me, which was called empty nest. My kids were graduating from high school. And I also did it because I was unhappy in my current work field.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking for something to kind of ease that boredom and that frustration with the work, and the volunteering certainly did that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The one of the things that I encountered while doing a little research here was a psychologist named Thomas Plant, with a T at the end. He's a PhD at Santa Clara University. And he did an essay on New Year's resolutions, and he went through some of the ones that we've been talking about, you know, the lose the weight, da-da-da. And what he says, I think, is significant. He says, well, improvements in diet and exercise are important. Maybe we can go beyond these typical resolutions to address something that might be much more important. Maybe the question that we should ask ourselves at this time of year is, what kind of person do I want to be?
Mm. Yeah.
Not necessarily what do I want to look like, how do I want to feel, you know, where do I want to work, but what kind of person do I want to be?
Interesting.
Yeah. So maybe those resolutions, like you were saying, Pinkley, those ones that we actually work on all year long, you know, the weight, the exercise, the appearance, the getting organized, maybe those aren't the things that we need to look at for New Year's. Maybe those are just ongoing things that we struggle with. Maybe what we need to do is say, you know, who am I going to be this year? Am I going to be the same person as last year? Or am I going to be a different person this year? And if I am, what ways am I going to be different? Or what way? And then look at those micro steps. If I want to be a more caring and helpful person, maybe my micro step is to go to the local senior center and volunteer for a day a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think this is important. And I think a lot of times our New Year's resolutions go by the wayside because, as you said, Pinkley, we do them all the time anyway. I mean, we're always thinking, well, I got to lose that weight.
Right.
Not just at the beginning of the year. But that focus on who we want to be.
And
know?
I would ask one other question with that, and I love that, Heather, is who do we want to be for? Do we want this? And for me, I think I would answer that. Who do I want to be? I want to be a more loving and accepting person of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
that's good.
Because the more loving and accepting I can be of myself, I think that that goes into the authenticity. That will just naturally illuminate to people around you.
Yeah.
So not so much who do I want to be for other people, because
mm-hmm.
we're never, ever going to live up to everyone's expectations of who we should be or what we should be doing.
Yeah, but, for sure.
But living up to our own expectations or, and that critical voice, boy, I think we should do a talk show on that. That critical voice is so, can be so negative and so detrimental to our overall well-being, but for me, I think that you raised a really good point, Heather. It's who do I want to be for me?
Yeah, yeah.
And go inward and really continue asking those questions and be loving and nurturing. Because it's so much easier to be loving and nurturing and caring for other people.
Oh, yeah.
We can be so busy taking care of everything else that we forget ourselves. And I don't know, I think women are more notorious for that.
Yeah.
But really, what does that look like?
We're taught to be the caregivers, We're taught to be the ones responsible for relationships. So, of course, we tend to look outward more than inward, I think, when we're looking to help people or be kind. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head here, Pinkley. You know, what kind of a person do we want to be for ourselves?
For ourselves. Mm-hmm. For ourselves, yeah.
Can I just pop in here with something? I'm kind of stepping on your territory, Deborah, because you always like to end the show with a quote. But I was fortunate this year, very, very fortunate, that my daughter, who just returned from China, wrote me a little book.
Nice.
And her little book is Things I Learned from My Mother. And
wow.
In there are all sorts of things like it's really not necessary to measure the Rice Krispies. It's for Rice Krispie treats. oh, she and I went round and round about that for a while. But there's something here that I think is significant to our conversation today. And she says, sometimes life is tough, but it is what I do, not what the world does, that matters most.
Awesome. Good teacher, Heather.
Well, I thought it was a very good insight on her part.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, yeah, I think that's what we're kind of saying here, isn't it, Pinkley? That it's what I do. It's what I think about myself. It's the kind of person I want to be for me. That's the real basis of not only change in our lives, but change in the world.
Right. Because you're always going to have outside expectations coming at you every day, all day, especially in the different roles that we have, you know, and we do have many roles, mothers, aunts, grandmothers, coworkers, you know, all these different roles that we experience every day. But who and what can I give to myself?
Yeah.
And I think that, again, for me, it's just that authenticity, staying true to myself and standing ground. And that's hard. That's really, really difficult to stand true to yourself and be authentic.
Well, maybe the hardest part is finding out what it means to be true to yourself, you know? What is it that I really need? I'm so used to thinking about other people and what they need. What is it that would be being true to myself?
Correct.
Who is myself?
Well, you are right, talking right up my alley right now. That's what I talk about in my talk show, Heather.
Which is?
Self-empowerment strategies. It's called Deborah Says. But that is one of my priorities, is knowing yourself, because we aren't taught to know ourselves. We're taught to know about everybody else and care for everybody else. And so that is one of the priorities we talk about often. The show is Sundays at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and right here on blogtalkradio.com. But, yeah, Deborah Says, but I think you're both talking something that's very, very important and real for me, and that is knowing ourselves. And I agree with what you're saying, that being authentic is hard, hard work. And you never know if you're being authentic enough, you know, or if you're... I just think it's really important to know ourselves and be authentic. I love how this conversation is ending up for us today.
I do, too. I feel very encouraged, and I hope that the listeners do, too, because it is a new beginning, and it's a good time to feel encouraged and to start thinking about who we want to be and how can we make that happen.
Yeah.
Deborah,
a new beginning, and I think the important part of this, too, is a new beginning, a new year, while at the same time honoring who you are, what has made you who you are up to this point.
Oh, yeah.
To not discount that, because I think that's so important.
Yeah.
And honor and celebrate, you know, your successes, your failures, your challenges, things that you wish you could have done different. But to really try to encompass that and enfold that all into one as we move forward into the new year.
Deborah, do you have a real quick quote for us?
I do. Rainier Maria Rilke says, and now let us welcome the new year, full of things that have never been. So I think that is what we're pondering and talking about, and been a pleasant conversation. We are three women.
Three ways.
Three divas. Until next Saturday.